Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Sound Bites, broadcast originally on this Saturday, December 30th, 2000, our final Sound Bites of the year. And I'm Bob Smith with our panelists, Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray, joining you and getting ready to answer your questions. All you have to do is call them in at 716-263-9994. Our lines are open right now, and we'll begin answering your questions right after we check on the latest in computing news on this edition of your Computer Users Group of the Air, Sound Bites. And wishing you a very, very happy new year. This is Sound Bites on WXXI Rochester, WEOS FM Geneva, on City Cable 12, your Tab Order cable system, on WBGT channels 40 and 26. I'm Bob Smith.
I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Dave Enright.
And we should be wishing everybody a happy new millennium.
Yes.
The real millennium.
The real millennium.
I refuse to be drawn into these religious disputes.
I know. It's a numeric dispute.
Right. Yes.
I know some folks say that the millennium started last year. Some folks
They're wrong.
Say it's
Correct.
Starting this coming year. Start your millennium wherever you like and enjoy it.
Gentlemen, start your millennium.
Gentlemen, start your millennium. Absolutely.
Vroom, vroom.
The Millennium 500. Actually, they should have one somewhere. They probably do already for Indy Lights or something. But anyway, let's get to the news. And it begins with a topic which also happens to be our poll topic of the week on our website, www.soundbites.org. And that happens to be Egghead getting creamed by a hacker invader. Nicholas?
Yes, egg cream. Egghead.com scrambled on Friday to gauge how much of its 3.7 million customer database had been stolen by intruders during an online theft, which experts believe happened the day before. On Friday, Egghead.com Inc. acknowledged that the company's servers had been hacked by network intruders and its customers' credit card numbers potentially stolen. They have taken immediate steps to protect their customers by contacting the credit card companies they work with. Ooh, bad use of the word contact. Sources inside the credit card industry say that Egghead had turned over the names of 3.7 million credit card holders, any number of whose data could have been compromised. It is unclear, however, how much of any of that had been compromised. So if you bought from Egghead this season, you may get a call from your credit card company on Tuesday.
I got a call from mine over a $50 charge, wanting to verify it, but they'd let the $500 charge go through. I want to know how they flagged that one little charge.
What is their motto? Randomly vigilant?
Yeah.
Anyway, watch out on that. That doesn't mean you shouldn't deal with Egghead. They're obviously catching things quickly, and hopefully minimal damage will result from that. But we're going to find out during the poll at www.soundbites.org what you think about the damage done and how it might possibly change your online buying habits. Be interesting to see. The voting has already begun. We have a significant number of votes in. We'll review that in the middle of the show and again at the end and again next week. Meanwhile, Dave, new studies of the web indicate frustration abounds.
You know what? Some folks, this is a wild story. It's, you know, being called Welcome to the Worldwide Beep Beep Beep, beep Web. Where they've done a survey, and now they're, you know, you've heard of the road rage and going postal and all that, I guess. Web surfers are actually getting, the clickaholics are getting downright frustrated because, you know, they go in and search on something, it's taking forever. Hello! I mean, I can still remember back when we were dialing up on 300 baud modems, just going to text-based, you know, sites.
The cool thing is at 1200 baud you could still read the text as it flew by.
Yeah, I mean, these folks, you know, oh, it's just totally unacceptable and all that, and some folks are even now actually going back to picking up the phone and calling customer service because they're finding the information on some of these web pages just too confusing, which I agree on that. Sometimes it is just easier to pick up the phone and do it that way, but like the rest of them, you know, everybody doesn't get too over frustrated when say they put in something and it comes back with goofy stuff that they didn't really mean, but if they turn around and take the time to define their search a little bit more instead of, you know, just leaving a blank open.
It either finds nothing or too much.
Yeah, well, exactly.
And why do you think there is such a thing as library science? There's a science to being able to search. And you can't just sit down at a terminal and go, whoa, I'd like this one thing. But particularly when you're searching for you know, Microsoft product information, they use common words for the names of their products.
Yeah.
So it's not like you're going to find 16 references. You're going to find 70 billion. And, of course, as I've said a million times before, instant gratification is no longer fast enough. And so there's a problem there. But it really comes down to the fact that, you know, go take a library science course. Talk to librarians about how hard it is to search for something and really narrow down what you're finding.
Well, we need the elevators, like in Hitchhiker's Guide, who can see into the future. So they show up on the floor where they knew you were going to be at.
What they really got to do, what we got to do is set up a center where we still have some old 486s running 2400 baud modem.
Comparative.
Because these folks that sit there and, you know, tweak
and go to CompuServe
and sit there and, you know, it takes, you know, a few minutes for the system to boot up. Mm-hmm. It's still running Windows 3.1. They're dialing up on a 2400 baud modem.
But remember how fast that was compared to the 386 you upgraded?
It brings them back down to reality.
Yeah, but I think what you really described is the afterlife we're all going to go to if we're not very good.
Yeah.
Think about it. But anyway, I digress from that. Enough of the spiritual. We talk about Apple right now. And Steve, the word from Apple on their projections that indicate progress, a lot of people maybe right in saying that it also indicates that they ought to update their product line a little bit?
Yeah, it's a little interesting. Apple filed their 10-K report that the SEC requires of all companies, showing their fiscal year-end results for last year, fiscal year on 2000, which ended for Apple in September. They're actually, their first quarter ends December 31st, so they're a quarter ahead of everybody. But basically, for 2000, net sales were up 30% to nearly $8 billion. Net income was up 31%. Pretty much as a company, everything was up last year. Sales were up, revenues were up, cash was up. They have more than $4 billion in cash. So it's interesting to see what their stock has been trading at, even though the company is doing so well. What Apple is warning, though, is that because of an overestimation and a misestimation of the number of machines that were going to be sold during the first quarter, which ends this month for the holiday season, Apple's got a higher than expected inventory. So they're expecting the next couple of quarters are going to be significantly lower. The rebates that they've started putting out, the price drops they've been forced to do to clear the inventory out. So they're expecting that probably fiscal year 2001 is going to be a little less, down in the $6.5 billion range. But then starting in fiscal 2002, that's going to jump out quite a bit from that.
Their problem was a mismatch of inventory and demand among their various product
Basically,
lines, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Apple was expecting the Cube to be a hot seller because it's so cool. What they misjudged is how much people were willing to pay for cool. And the current $1,800 price is a little too high. And that's where one of the rebates are. If you buy the Cube and an Apple monitor, there's a $300 rebate. So that brings the Cube price down to $15.99, which is a little bit an easier price to swallow. Also, what Apple's expecting is, what Apple anticipated is that with Macworld January coming up in January 9th, people are holding off their purchases to see what might be announced, and also with OS X shipping, the official OS X release date, February 24th, we'll see when it actually ships, people are also holding off waiting for machines with OS X. The big rumors for Macworld are possibly a G4 PowerBook, and maybe speed bumps in the current G4 lines to get the clock speeds higher. There's still a perceived marketing problem that Apple has a 500 megahertz G4. Intel has got 1,000 megahertz Pentium. It must be twice as fast. In actuality, in raw benchmarks and raw processing power for programs like Photoshop, and After Effects for video editing, things that need the number crunching, the G4 is more than twice as fast as the Pentium. So actually, Apple's top-of-the-line dual G4 500 that has two 500 megahertz processors is nearly equivalent to a Pentium at 2.5 gigahertz.
Which doesn't exist yet,
yeah. So Apple needs to bring up their clock speeds from a marketing standpoint so that there's less customer confusion.
It's like in the auto business, where power-to-weight ratio is something
that racers understand, but the general public hasn't been educated about yet.
Yeah,
so they got to work out power-to-weight ratio or its equivalent.
Your Mack truck has a 600-horsepower engine. It must be able to go really fast.
Yeah, but a Chevy Cavalier will blow the doors off.
Yep, with only 100 horsepower.
Exactly.
Well, a Chevy Cavalier may be able to reach the doors.
Not bad lately. They're actually not that bad. But anyway, with that, we wrap it up for this week, and we'll head to the phones next on Soundbites. Soundbites continuing on WXXI Rochester, WEOS FM Geneva, on City Cable 12, on Big TV, channels 40 and 26, and of course on the World Wide Web at www.soundbites.org. And without further ado, we take your calls at 716-263-9994. First call we take is going to be on the road with Wayne in the city. Hi, Wayne.
Hi, how are you?
Doing great.
Yeah, all right. I have a couple quickies. Mm-hmm. One is I have run Windows 98. It's a Pentium 2. I think there's 64 meg RAM in there. When I try and shut down, I go to start, and you go to shut down, and, of course, when you click on shut down, your screen dims a little. Guess what? It doesn't go past that. I'll get that next screen where it gives you the restart or shutdown options. I click either way, shutdown or restart. I just get the desktop right back again.
This is you're running Windows 98 SE or the regular one?
Regular, I think.
Then you need to go to SE immediately, and you also need to download a patch from Microsoft that disables fast shutdown.
You can manually disable it for now. Go to Start, Run, and MS Config. In the Advanced button, there's a checkbox that says Disable Fast Shutdown. Basically, Microsoft tried to write code that makes Windows shut down faster. They screwed up, and it doesn't shut down at all.
It locks it, hangs it up.
Oh.
They were close, though. It did have an effect on shutdown.
Yeah.
I had this problem, and then it cleared up, and now it's doing it again. So
yeah, it's semi-random, depending on what else is going on in the system. But if you shut it off, it'll go away.
TSR running.
All right, so I should go to Windows and upload a...
You want to go to upgrade to Windows 98 Second Edition.
There's an interesting issue now that there used to be a $20 upgrade for Windows 98 users to upgrade to 98 Second Edition. If you go to Microsoft.com/Windows98, there is a button that says to order Service Pack 1, which was some of the patches to 98. The picture they show when you order Service Pack 1 is the 98 Second Edition upgrade. So and it's only $5.
I see.
So I've ordered a couple of them, and we'll see what actually comes. The text says Service Pack 1. The picture says 98 Second Edition.
I see.
So one of them is wrong.
Yeah.
Or both of them.
Or both of them. Yeah, we'll see what actually gets.
Millennium.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, my second question is, I cannot run the defrag. It runs eternally, and it doesn't get anywhere. You know, it doesn't.
Have you tried doing it in safe mode? Start your machine up and go in safe mode?
I don't know if I tried it or not.
Because if you've got things, which most folks do, have running down in the sys tray, they're running TSR, so they're taking up resources, and it quite often confuses the defrag. The best thing to do is start the machine up, hit F8. You'll be presented with a screen where you can select to go into safe mode. Go into safe mode and run defrag from there.
Also, ScanDisk has the same problems. Windows runs a lot of faceless applications in the background that you don't know about, but they prevent ScanDisk and defrag from running because they're modifying the hard drive.
Yeah, I get that message. It's restarted so many times.
Yeah. You got it.
So I should go F8. I do that right when it's booting?
Yeah, when you see starting Windows 98, hit the F8.
But before the Windows 98 logo screen.
Right.
You have about half a second to hit the keys right.
Yeah, just once it starts passing, you know, and it's detected the hard drives and all that stuff, start hitting the F8 key occasionally, and then all of a sudden you'll be presented with the menu.
There's also an option in the one of the invisible files. I think it's in io.sys, where you can have it always show the menu, which is kind of nice if you like to do that.
Okay. Hopefully that'll help, Wayne. Thanks for calling in.
And before you go to the next call, let me just remind folks, particularly those of you who call in on cell phones, that if you don't remember everything we've told you, You can go to the Soundbites website, and from the main page, there is on the lower left side, you can get to the Soundbites show archives. And sometime tomorrow or Monday, the hardworking folks at the Genesee Gateway, God bless them,
really,
will have, maybe even later this afternoon, will have the current show up online for you to re-listen to. So you can listen to it there and be sitting there with your little notebook and take all the notes you need.
Right. And it is, of course, available for you either in real audio or MP3 mode over there. So if you use either one of those file formats to download your audio and hear it, you'll be in good shape.
There you go.
And there you go. And we will go.
We should put out a best of CD.
Cool.
All the shows on
it
one CD.
So, well, we've had 11 years. Maybe we get a CD.
Well,
yeah, best of, yeah. Well, best. Well, that's a relative term.
Yeah,
we didn't
really
say good. We said just best
yeah,
of what
okay.
we've done. Yeah.
Just clarifying.
Call it Soundbite's greatest hits.
Yeah. That'd be all the shows.
Oh, and absolutely. You know what? We're not going to tell you this. You know, we do the Soundbite's web ring.
Mm-hmm.
There's a fellow. You guys may remember a few weeks ago, a fellow named Guy called in. He had this 950 megahertz.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I asked him to please drop it off at my shop, and I
right,
yeah.
right, right. And I have I don't have a web ring, but I've got a button list. People who've got the Ask Nick button on their page, and I put them on my page. Well, Guy joined the Ask Nick button list, and I went to his site, and he's actually got the snippet where we talk about him here on the show up on
cool.
his website.
Cool.
And probably he's going to have this one on too if he's listening today.
Right, and
so,
we've. Speaking
I
of the
still
web
want ring. Him to try. If he wouldn't mind, bring it down the shop and I'll try it out.
Take
for
a look.
Six
he's
months.
Got he's got the yep. side cut out and there's neon inside it, so you can see the inside of the
cool.
machine. And he's got a whole website about it.
Speaking of the web ring, it's got everything from companies with which our panelists are associated to Altered Thugs in Space to Tours of Rochester to a site about nursing and health to folks who like Nirvana.
And for those of you, as long as we're talking about the web ring, might as well talk about it. Joining the web ring makes you a little closer part of the Soundbites family, and it's very easy to do. Just go to the main page, www.soundbites.org, click on Join the Soundbites web ring, and it will take you to a page explaining what it's about and how it works. You join the site. We email you some code to put on your page. Once I see that the code is actually on your page, I make you an active member of the web ring. So it's really simple to do. It gets your name out a little bit because lots of people will see it as they wander the web and see all the people on the ring.
Mm-hmm.
And it declares your affiliation as a friend of Soundbites. So www.soundbites.org, join the Soundbites web ring.
Absolutely. And joining us right now is Paul in Rochester. Paul, you're on the air. Hi, Paul.
Hi. I'm calling about upgrading my computer. I'm finally biting the bullet, and I'm going to probably get a system that's Windows-based.
Mm-hmm.
And I recall hearing that people have had problems with the Millennium Edition of Windows.
Well, it's the 1.0 version,
yeah,
and there
it's
are
got its features.
You have to be aware of the fact that Millennium does not run on some older legacy
well,
hardware.
Well, it makes sense because it's not truly the Millennium right. until after January 1st.
Right, exactly. So if you've got older hardware, you might want to go up to the Windows Millennium website and check to see whether or not your hardware is listed in their hardware compatibility list.
Oh, but if I'm buying a new computer and it's coming bundled on there already,
should
then
be okay.
If they've
right.
certified it, then you should be okay.
The
right.
real issue then is the peripherals when
yeah,
you buy printer, scanner, whatnot.
I have to buy the yeah, I know I have to buy the peripherals that go with the Millennium
right.
edition.
The, well, locating the updated drivers is going to be the big issue. A lot of
unless,
companies are coming out
right.
with it.
Unless that says Millennium enabled right on the box, then you're sure it has Millennium drivers.
But see, my theory still holds true. They came out with 1.0 for the Millennium. It's not the true Millennium. Now, by next year, they'll come out with patch 1.1, which will be an odd number, and it will
work.
Better. It'll be the true Millennium.
Yeah.
That's right.
I see.
Odd numbers above 1.0 always work better.
Yeah, brand new hardware with pre-installed Millennium works fine.
Okay. The only other question I had was, we had a Mac and we had At Ease on it. Is there any comparable program like At Ease to to block things out from the kids.
Not really. For that, you want to go to Windows 2000, which does let you set up multiple users with security levels and protection between each username.
Oh, but that's not available on the Millennium Edition.
No, Millennium Edition is basically Windows 3.1 and Windows 95. They're all based on DOS. DOS is a completely open operating system, and you don't get the protection that you get with a real multi-user operating system like the NT family, which is NT in 2000.
There's probably a couple of casual programs, something like Microsoft Bob used to be.
Well, there are programs that will protect you if the kids aren't smarter than you are.
Well, the Compact had a, so you could set up multiple desktops.
Right.
So you could sit there and create, like, log on screen names. So the adults could have theirs, and then each one of the kids could have theirs, and you could control what they got at. And
yes and no. The problem is that all you have to do is bypass that, and it is very, I'm not going to tell you how to do it, but it is very easy to do.
Oh, yeah.
And you own the system.
Uh-huh.
Whereas that's not true in the NT family, NT in 2000,
yeah,
where you have to know the administrator's password to own the system.
Good luck. Hey, do thank you for calling. Good question. And we go next to a question from Mike in the city watching us on cable. Hi, Mike.
Well, this is almost a repeat of what you guys just talked about. I've got a new computer that I assembled myself, but I'm not sure what to put on it for an operating system, whether it should be Windows 98 SE or ME or what, for home use, basically.
Are you alone or do you have a family?
I'm alone.
Then it doesn't matter.
Yeah. 98 SE will serve you fine.
Get them all.
Yeah.
Build a bunch of machines.
Well, you get both. You get both. This way you can try out one and you don't like it, you wipe the machine out and try the next one.
Yeah. But the reality is that in the long run, the NT family, the NT-based operating systems, NT in 2000, are safer and more secure both on the internet and from your local desktop than are the DOS-based versions. So that's your choice. But again, make sure that whatever operating system you buy, all the pieces of your machine work with it.
Okay.
For example, if you get NT, there are a lot of video cards that don't work with it. DirectX, anything higher than 3 doesn't work with it. And USB doesn't work with it unless you buy a certain card. If you're going to do 2000,
certain hard drives too,
right,
is a challenge.
Right, and if you're going to do 2000, things are a little more open as far as the peripherals you can buy because it does USB and stuff. But are the drivers available? The same thing is true of ME. But if you live alone and there aren't kids around that you're hiding stuff from, then you don't need the security that the NT family gives you.
Oh, I see. The 2000 is part of the NT family.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay.
Right, there's the NT branch, which is currently NT in 2000, in the whole 2000 side, and then there's the DOS branch, which is all the others.
So 2000 was going to be NT5, and then Microsoft was deciding to merge their OSs together, so they called it 2000, wanted everybody to upgrade to it. All the 98 users complained, and the corporate users complained, so they came out with ME and shifted and are staying back with two separate operating system platforms. Eventually, they'll probably merge them together for real.
But either is a capable operating system. The question is what suits your needs
and what suits your budget.
And it sounds like the critical thing switching over to 2000 or NT is you've got to make sure that all your hardware will play with it.
And ME, because it's new and there aren't a lot of drivers yet.
I see. Okay, thanks very much.
Sure. Thank you very much. And we go next to Alonzo in the city of Rochester. Hi, Alonzo.
Yes, I have a Mac iBook, and I bought Virtual PC 98. And every time I try to start Red Alert 2, it says application has a unexpected equip because of a Type 2 error.
There's a lot of problems with DirectX, as Nick just mentioned, even in NT. With the Virtual PC emulator, do you remember what version of Virtual PC you got?
98. Let me find
the box. Well, was it the Virtual PC 3 or the new version 4?
3.
Okay, there's a 303 patch on Kinectic's website that helps somewhat. How much memory do you have allocated to Virtual PC?
1G.
1 gigabyte to Virtual PC itself.
Yeah.
Since the iBook can only go to 384 megs of RAM, how much memory do you have in your iBook?
I got 10 gigabytes.
No, not no. not disk space. Memory.
Memory.
RAM.
RAM. Let me think. I'm looking at the book. Should have.
The stock configuration is 64 megabytes. Did you buy any additional memory?
Yeah, it came with another 64.
Yeah.
Okay.
You haven't put anything
you
else in.
You haven't put anything anymore in.
No.
That's barely enough to run Windows itself. You really need to add at least 128 megs of RAM, if not another 256 megs, to give Windows enough memory to run. And since you're trying to run a game on top of Windows, it's especially memory intensive. The DirectX problems, the game problems, you're basically trying to run a PC in your Mac, and you pretty much don't have enough memory for it.
You probably want a lot more RAM, which fortunately is not too expensive.
Yeah, RAM is pretty cheap right now. So we expect an artificial inflation pretty
soon. Oh, yeah. It's got to happen.
A warehouse of sand will burn in Taiwan.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you very much. So RAM is the answer, Alonzo. And we go next to Dave in Rochester. Dave, you're on the air on Sound Bites.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I have a Pentium 3 with Microsoft Windows 98, and I'm very happy with it. The only thing is, with Windows Media Player, the streaming videos are very small in the central part of the screen, and I'm wondering, with the Pentium 4, what kind of improvements have they made? I'll hang up and listen to your answer.
That's okay, almost you. Never your doing. The place that creates the video determines the size of the video. And one of the problems with Windows Media Player is that the data stream that they send is huge. And the bigger the picture, the bigger the data stream. So if they're going to make a data stream that's usable by any standard number of people, they have to make the picture really small so that even people on semi-slow connections can at least see something of the video. So if there's nothing, well, you can put it up to 2x and 4, you can do a zoom thing, but that just makes big blocks of color. It's ugly. So it is not your doing that it is that way.
That's one of the big advantages of QuickTime is it's multi-streamable. QuickTime can read your connection speed. You tell it your connection speed. And when the authors create the QuickTime stream, they can send different size streams depending on your connection speed. So if you're on a slow modem, they can give you a small window. If you're on high-speed DSL or Roadrunner, then they can give you a bigger window. And that's all handled by the QuickTime server.
How does RealPlayer handle that?
RealPlayer G2 does the same thing. You have to have the G2 player to take advantage of it, or RealPlayer 8 to take advantage of it.
If you're down in 5 or 7, as a lot of older machines with slower processors have to use.
And then it still depends on the real server. They have to be using a newer version of the server, too.
Right.
And we have one more call to take before the break, and that call is going to come from Brian in Rochester. Brian, you're on the air.
How you guys doing?
Doing great.
Loyal listener for years, boys.
Thanks. Glad to have you with us. What can we do for you?
I've run into a bit of a problem in an upgrade from Windows 95 to Windows 98. I've done quite a few of them for associates and friends, and I never quite ran into this issue.
Of course, you're doing your own machine.
No, actually, I got through that one fine, and all the ones at work and everything's good. My sister-in-law got a scanner that required USB, and she was running 95.
Mm-hmm.
So I grabbed my handy packet of disks and went over there. It's a Gateway 2000. We went to do the upgrade. The system loads fine, apparently. It gets to the first boot, shuts down, comes back up, and when I get into the auto-detect mode of the installation process, the detecting software.
It's having problems.
Yeah, and I get the white screen, and, in fact, the white screen comes up with no explanation of an error. Even Bill Gates couldn't figure out.
What you got to do, when 98 first came out, Gateway, Compact, Hewlett-Packard, all those companies,
mm-hmm.
Advised folks not to do the upgrade right away.
Okay.
What you had to do was go to their particular site. In this case, you'd go to the Gateway site. And they've got a number of drivers that you can download before you go and do the upgrade to Windows 98.
Okay, because I went to their knowledge base, extensively at Gateway's website. I didn't see any reference to that.
But they're trying not to advertise this because
what you do is go to the support page for your model computer and say, oh, what drivers are new, and it will list them.
You want to get all those drivers and update those, and then you should be able to handle it when it goes into the detect mode.
The other thing you want to be aware of is it depends on what version of USB your chipset your system is using, your gateway is using.
Well, this is a two-year-old computer, and I have my that's basically the vintage of my discs.
Well, you know, it's not the point. The point is that there are two versions, 1.0 and 1.1.
Okay.
Windows 98 doesn't work well with 1.0.
Yeah. Okay.
So if the gateway system itself uses 1.0 USB, you may continue to run into problems. And I don't know that you can upgrade that. I don't know if it's an upgradable chip or
what. Well, the other workaround is Windows, Microsoft, even with SE, still has a patch for their USB,
but only for second edition. There is no patch for first edition.
Right. So we restored Windows 95, and I was going to do just a complete, backup, then clean install. Mm-hmm.
You're going to run into the same problem without the right drivers.
All right. Okay. Very good.
Have them handy, so when it asks for them, you've got them.
Yeah. All right. Oh well, actually, never asked for drivers. I mean,
because it's trying to do the hardware detect, and it's having problems with those particular components that are in a gateway, so that's why you want to go up to their website and get the latest and greatest drivers.
Very good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks
mm-hmm.
for checking in. 716-263-9994. We'll be back with more of your calls, so if you're online, stay with us. We'll look forward to answering your questions in just a few minutes here on Soundbites. Soundbites comes to you over WXXI Rochester, WEOS FM Geneva, on City Cable 12 on your Time Warner cable system in Rochester, on Big TV, WBGT Rochester channels 40 in the city and 26 in Ontario County, and of course on the World Wide Web at www.soundbites.org. Bob Smith with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray. And now we reach into our internet mailbag, where you write to us at soundbites@netac.net. And ask us your questions of the week. And the questions of the week begin with Bob in Rochester, who writes about printer sharing. He says, I'm using a Mac LC for word processing and spreadsheets, and I acquired a Dell 4100 PC for email, games, etc. The Mac has an HP DeskWriter black and white printer. The Dell uses an HP 520 black and white printer. I guess that's an inkjet, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And the two computers share a 17-inch monitor through a single switch box. I interchange the two keyboards to use the computer of choice. This works quite well. Now, what can be done to share the HP 520 between the two computers? Is a similar switch box arrangement possible? And Bob says eventually he will replace the HP 520 with a color printer and would like the suggested arrangement to allow that upgrade as well.
A lot depends on whether his current HP has a serial port or not, because the Mac LC uses serial printers. If it doesn't have a serial port, then you need to get a parallel to serial adapter, which costs about $100. So you're usually better off buying a new printer that has serial for the Mac and parallel for the PC. Something like the Epson 740 or 750 has serial and parallel. So it's... with the older DeskWriter models like that, they were serial only or parallel only, so they could only work on one side or the other. It's only in the last couple of years that printers have started having multiple ports.
Now,
well, he can also hook the two together.
Yeah, you can network the two computers together with Ethernet and then copy the files back and forth and just print it on the machine you want.
Well, can't he just set each one up as a print server?
If Windows has Apple drivers Pop. For the desk writer, and if he can find Mac drivers for the desk jet.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we have one off the Soundbites bulletin board where folks post their questions on our website, and we invite all of you listening in to join in and answer questions, and we pull some from the bulletin board as well to answer as well. And this one comes from Rick in Rochester. He says, I've recently purchased a second computer, and I'm looking to put this second computer on an in-house network so that both computers can take advantage of my Roadrunner connection to the Internet. From what I can gather, there are two ways of doing this. The first, to acquire a second IP number and to connect the second computer using a hub and a network card. The second way is to hook Roadrunner up to a router
and route both computers through this connection. Mm-hmm. I'm interested in the pros and cons to either hookup. Any help would be appreciated.
Well, the Linksys, you can buy what, a Linksys router?
Linksys is $150. Netgear is $150.
That's the four-port version, which includes four ports, so you can plug four different computers in.
Right, and both of those work really well. Now, at an extra $5 a month, it's going to take you, what, 3 years to pay for the router,
yeah.
And then you still have to set up the router. But you can certainly do either one. The pros and cons?
Yeah, for $50, you get a hub and an Ethernet card for the second machine, and then $5 a month for the second IP address.
Right, it's still going to take you 2.5 years to...
The biggest advantage of getting a Linksys or Netgear router is that it has a built-in firewall. So you don't have to worry too much about the security issues.
Otherwise, the biggest con is you have to actually set it up.
Right.
Yeah. And sharing stuff between, sharing a printer over that network, if you go through that Linksys, it doesn't like it.
Right. So there are both pros and cons. You know, it's $5 a month, $5-6 a month, whatever that is. It's not terribly expensive. If you're going to do it on your own, then you're going to be kind of a pioneer, and you got to be ready to play and be ready to have it not work right away.
But if he was gonna, if he's got this miniature network at home, though, since he's already got the hub and he plugs the Linksys into the hub, he should be okay as far as still sharing the files.
Right.
If you already have a hub, you can get the cheaper one-port routers, which are like $100.
Right. Well, he's already got a hub, so yeah. So you can certainly do that. The cons are very minimum. The router is a bottleneck when it comes to speed, but not for two machines. You know, that's not really going to be a problem for two machines. So I wouldn't get too excited about that. It will work fine.
Yep. And now let's go, just before we get back to the phones, to a consideration of our interactive poll of the week. Now, first of all, our last poll was, I sent out electronic greeting cards this year, and 81% said they sent 5 or fewer, 7% said more than 20, 6 to 10, well, that was 5%, 11 to 15, 5%, and 16 to 20, well, just one vote.
It would be interesting, and I really should have followed up with this, it would be interesting to find out how many people did not send electronic greeting cards because of all the viruses that are going around. Nobody's opening electronic greeting cards.
Yeah, exactly.
I got several this Christmas, and I thank everyone who sent them to me, but I didn't open them. Even though, you know, I update my virus scanner every single night, I still didn't open them.
Yeah. Now, this doesn't count, of course, folks who sent personal messages by regular email of holiday greetings.
Right, right. And, of course, Happy New Year. Yeah. There's a Happy New Year virus going around, so any email that came in with Happy New Year got tossed in the trash. But this week's poll is a little different. We've already talked at the top of the show. Our lead news item was Egghead getting hacked. And so my question this week had to do with how you feel about that. You know, if you have bought online, how is it going to have an impact on your online buying? And so the question was Egghead getting hacked. And the choices are, doesn't have much impact on my online buying. I've never bought online anyway, or makes me very wary of buying online again.
The breakdown is interesting right now. We already have 50 votes in, so the votes are coming in fast. 64% say it's not having much impact. 28% say it's making them wary of buying online, and only 8% say they don't do it anyway, so they don't care about it.
One of the things to keep in mind is that most credit card companies, I think it's regulated by law, you're only liable for the first $50 of erroneous charges.
If it's a real credit card, one of the hundreds
the
of not real credit cards.
Yeah. And most of the companies will waive that anyway.
Right.
The bigger issue is that you're more likely to lose your credit card number by handing it to a waiter working at minimum wage who walks away with it for 20 minutes in a restaurant.
Well, even though the waiters are all honest people, the reality is that if I wanted to steal somebody's credit card number, I could either spend months and tens of thousands of dollars setting up a hack, or I could buy a pair of Playtex gloves and go dumpster diving behind any good restaurant in town and come up with dozens of them.
There's also been issues with banks that throw away paperwork without shredding it. And you can go to dumpsters behind banks and find account numbers and whatnot.
And we've had no new people join the web ring today. Very depressing.
Join. Now.
So vote early and vote often. I'd really like to see more people. We have tens of thousands of listeners, and we generally get 100 and change voting. So if you get the opportunity, we'd love to have you vote at www.soundbites.org.
Well, 1% response is pretty good for direct marketing.
Yes, it
actually
is.
It is, really.
And right now, let's get your responses as we wrap up the polls, wrap up the Internet mailbag for this week. (216) 263-9994. That's the number you call to get on board with Soundbites on WXXI, WEOS-FM, Big TV, City Cable 12, and, of course, on the World Wide Web. Bob Smith with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray. And next to, I believe it is time to hear from Jim in Irondequoit. Hi, Jim.
Hi there. Happy New Year to all of you.
Well, thank you.
Hey, you.
Question I have regards Internet Explorer 5 under the favorites. How do I transfer some of my favorite web addresses, let's say, to
the A drive.
So I don't want to save it on an A drive floppy.
There is a folder inside your Windows subdirectory somewhere called Favorites.
Mm-hmm.
You simply need to find that. The easiest way to find it is to hit the Start button, select Find or Search, depending on which version of Windows you're running, and search for Favorites.
Okay.
And when you find it, just drag it off to a floppy or another hard drive or wherever you want you win.
That's it.
That's it.
It's that simple.
I usually use reinstalling Explorer as a method of cleaning out my favorites and starting again.
You're right.
Oh, that's interesting. Click. That's interesting. Click. And I have 2,000 favorites.
Yeah,
right.
Might be a good idea as one goes into the new year to get rid of some of the old stuff. I want to ask a question about the Millennium Windows edition. How do we know that there are updates or new patches that need to be added? My understanding was when I installed it originally that it would inform me automatically of any updates for the Millennium Windows edition, but I haven't seen that happening.
There haven't really been any.
No, there hasn't. No.
Well, one of the issues is that it can only check when you're connected to the Internet.
Okay.
And it does it check automatically, or do you have to tell it?
You got to tell it.
Because in Windows 98, I haven't seen Millennium yet. Windows 98, in your Start menu, there's a Windows Update command. Mm. Where it goes out to Microsoft's website and asks, are there any updates? Here's what I'm running.
Same with Millennium.
With Millennium, yeah.
So how do I do that with Millennium? How do I do that check that you just talked about? Where do I go to?
Off your Start toolbar, isn't there a Windows Update?
Okay, let me check quick here.
But you have to be connected to the Internet.
Yeah, I see it. Windows Update. Okay.
There you go. Click on that.
There you go. Thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling in. 716-263-9994, and time next to hear from Bruce in Rochester. Bruce, you're on the air. Hello? Go ahead, Bruce.
Oh, hello.
Yes, sir, we can hear you.
Okay. I have a question about a little explanation of what systems resources really means to me. I have 192 meg RAM, 15 gig hard drive. 11 of the RAM is shared graphics, and I got a 566 speed. Well, my question is, my system resources, during the course of a day, it runs down to about 40 and maybe up to about 75, and it doesn't really seem to be doing any harm. And I was just wondering, is that a normal operation?
Yeah, it is. Let me explain a little bit about resources.
The edited version.
Yeah. Basically, there is a 60... What version, what operating system are you running?
Windows 98.
There is a 64K area of memory set aside called the heap. Into that heap are put pointers for everything you do during the day. That's all the icons you have on your desktop, all the little things in your system tray, every window you open, everything, all the fonts that you load, everything.
Mm.
The theory is when you close down a program, that pointer is supposed to be destroyed in the system heap, and room is then made for more pointers.
No, that sounds good in theory.
That's the theory. The problem is that many times the pointers are not, in fact, deleted correctly. This is true for every version of Windows. You'd think they'd have fixed it by now. No. Every version of Windows. And that area, that 64K area, is the system resource area, the heap. It doesn't matter how much memory you have a 64K heap. In the NT family, they've solved the problem by doubling the size of the heap to 128K, and therefore, maybe they moved it to 256K. So it takes longer for the heap to fill up, but it still fills up. They didn't fix the problem, they just gave you more room to have the problem in. So it's not equivalent to the amount of memory you have. It is a fixed area of memory, and simply opening and closing programs fills that up. Your solution is that depending on how often you open and close programs, maybe once, maybe twice a day, you should reboot your system.
Eventually, what happens is when the heap gets full, your machine crashes, which makes you reboot and then start the process over again. So if you've been lucky enough to not be crashing, you're rebooting manually.
Oh, I've been crashing.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well.
Mm-hmm. But one of the biggest issues is fonts. I ran into a client yesterday that had 606 fonts.
Huh?
And his system heap was at 52%.
What, is he a printer?
No, he didn't know. Just the programs he's been installing over the years.
Yeah,
CorelDRAW, Lotus.
Well, Corel has gotten better. I mean, they used to dump a boatload of fonts on their machine, but they've wised up on that and just put a few and you can...
Yeah, take a look at the 5 or 10 fonts you probably use and remove all the rest of them.
How would you locate...
In control panels and fonts.
Control panels and fonts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I called Earthlink one time because I was having problems, and they had me go into systems or system resources.
Mm-hmm.
It was down about 30-35%. They had me go into start MS config.
Yep.
And remove some of the things that I had on the sys tray.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Because those are also controlled out of the heat.
Yeah, they eat up the resources.
And that's a little trickier because you have to know if you use that or not. And most of them are so cryptically named, you have no idea.
Yeah.
But the fonts are the easiest thing to remove.
Okay. You can't use much more than 5 or 6 fonts anyway, then.
Well, that's a typographic style. You shouldn't use more than 1 or 2 fonts in a document.
Right.
But, you know, my wife, who is a printer,
mm-hmm.
has thousands of fonts loaded on her laptop. Because she uses one or two for this document, one or two different ones for that document. She does a newsletter for this group and a poster for that group. So she's got thousands of fonts loaded, and she's always complaining, well, I can't help you, you know.
Well, if I delete a lot of those fonts...
That will help.
Well, remove them from the fonts folder, and then they're out of your system heap. And your resources will free up. And if you want that font back, you can put it back into the font folder.
Got to go long distance now to John, and rather Stephen, in Geneva, New York, listening to us on our Geneva affiliate WEOS. Hi, Stephen.
Howdy. My question is, under Windows 98, second edition, in the scheduler, I have an entry for the critical updates. It keeps going off every time I don't want it to. I've tried changing the schedule so that it was like once a week or the first Thursday of the month or something like that. Nothing takes.
I've even tried removing the schedule, and that one always comes back.
Yeah. So no advice.
Well, it's another question of Microsoft thinking they know better than you do.
Well, in MS config, you can disable it.
I did that. It came back.
No, it comes back. You don't get to not look for the critical updates.
Yeah, I just didn't want to look for them so often.
You might be able, if you can find the actual name of the file, the task monitor itself, you might just be able to remove that file completely.
You'll get error messages.
Mm-hmm.
Probably, yeah, because it really wants to run it.
Yep.
Okay.
Have you tried just setting it for an odd time, like midnight, that the machine won't be on?
No, the problem is if the machine is off when it goes off, when you turn it back on, it immediately goes and looks for it.
Yep.
The only way you can solve that is if you say you want it to happen every Thursday at 3 a.m.,
yes.
You better have your machine on Thursday at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Okay. All right. That was it. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks for calling in. 716-263-9994 gets you on Soundbites, WXXI, WEOS-FM, Big TV, City Cable 12, and the World Wide Web. Bob Smith with Nick Francesco, David Wright, Steve Ray, and next to Nick in the city. Hi, Nick. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Nick.
Quick question.
Yes.
A Windows 98 SC machine that worked like a charmer all of a sudden decides that it's going to slow down to a crawl. And whenever we try to defrag or we try to get some information on the C drive, the whole system freezes.
What are you running any better software?
Norton.
Have you updated it lately?
Probably a month or two ago.
Guess what? 10 to 1 ads, you have one that I know were either Navi Dot or the various viruses. The past couple of weeks, I've seen such an explosion of viruses out there that if you haven't updated in the past couple of weeks, you're not running into
antivirus. Couple of days almost.
You're not running into updated. You're not running into virus software then. And you could have one of these worm viruses that are going around. I had a client, I just delivered a new machine, called me up the following week, and, oh, this thing is running slow, you sure? I go over there, and sure enough, he had the worm virus. Good. But I've only had it a week.
Yeah, that's the first thing to check.
Okay, would downloading the new definition...
Yeah, that should do. An easy way to do it, see, because usually it puts it in the startup group, is if you... right-click on the Start button and say Open, and you'll see a folder that says Programs. You double-click on that, and you'll see a bunch of folders. If you click on the Startup one and open it, and all of a sudden you see this like little scroll, like paper scroll that says Network or KAK. There's a bunch of viruses that put themselves in the Startup. You could be almost assured you got the virus.
And one of the features of Norton Antivirus is their live update feature, which will go out on the internet to a Symantec's website and download the latest definitions for you, and then you can do a full scan.
All right, so that's one of the things. The other thing that I was just concerned about is we just put a new printer in the system, into the computer, and it was working beautifully. You know, we would hit print and we'd get 12 pages a minute spit out at the other end almost immediately. The first time it slowed down, that's when we noticed it, is that we set print and it took 20 minutes to send something over
again,
to the printer.
Again, viruses attack.
Do that.
Yeah, you could be infested with viruses.
Basically, the virus takes so much of the processing power that nothing else can work.
Okay, so I'll just get in there, update the...
Yeah, give it a shot and let us know how you make out, though.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Thank you for calling in. 716-263. You too, sir. 716-263-9994. And I believe it is time for Mark in Pittsburgh. Hi, Mark.
Gentlemen, happy holidays.
Same deal.
Same to you.
Question about Word. A couple days ago, well, first of all, I'm running a 266 megahertz machine with 95 in office. A couple days ago, opened up a Word doc, and the document came up. I looked at it, and then a few seconds later, I got a dialog box saying that an error has occurred in your program. When I click on that, then comes up and says this program has performed an illegal operation and will be shut down.
Right.
What's going on?
Does it happen every time now?
It does happen every time, yeah.
Well, the program itself has in some way been damaged. It could be a virus. We go back to the same question. Are you running an recently updated antivirus program?
Running McAfee and just went to the newest engine last week in November and updated the DATs 2 days ago.
Have you tried opening Word by itself and not a document?
Yes, I have.
Same thing happens?
Actually, no. It'll open okay.
And then can you load documents into it?
No, that's when the problem starts.
No documents work or only certain documents don't work?
I think I've tried about three documents and all of them show the same problem.
The only thing I can suggest at this point is to uninstall and reinstall Office, or Word rather. There is clearly some damaged DLL somewhere.
He can also try renaming the normal.dot.
Start there, certainly.
Yeah. Except
that loads.
Yeah, that works. If you launch Word alone, then the normal template loads.
Right.
And if that works okay, try making a new document. From Word, save that, reopen it, and see what happens. What version of Word are you running?
97.
Which 97? There were several service
There's
packs.
There's an SR1 and an SR2 patch.
And then an SR2B.
Okay. So, get a patch.
You might need some of those patches as well, right. Yeah.
But if none of those work, it's just time to uninstall and then reinstall.
But when you, just one little trick. When you go to do the SR1 and 2 patch, the SR1 patch will let you install it with no problem. What you want to do is go into Word, go to the Help and About, and write down your license number. Because when you go to do the SR2 patch, it asks you for your license numbers. Why? I don't know for the life of me. It's not like I can use this patch for some other purpose, but it wants you to put in the license number.
Okay. For what it's worth, I just clicked on details, and it does say there's a protection fault in module such-and-so.dll.
You got a damaged DLL.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
That may just be the one that found the error, not the one that caused
the error. Yeah, you might want to uninstall Word and try reinstalling it.
Good luck. And we go next to John in Victor. Hi, John.
Hi, gentlemen. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I'm calling, I do some web programming at work and school, and so I've got a web server set up at home with a static IP over Roadrunner. And had to real quick try and get myself up to some speed on security issues because of the fact that I have to open up some ports selectively. You know, I've got a little bit more expensive firewall software, WinRoot Pro. And
who have you got? What are you using?
WinRoot Pro.
Win what?
WinRoot.
Oh.
WinRoot.
Yes, yes, yes. Sorry. Okay.
Maybe I'm not pronouncing it.
No, I couldn't hear you. It's my fault.
Okay. But, and it seems to work good. Like, I got some scanning software and scanned my ports. And since it wasn't acknowledging it, you know, it took like 2 days to go the whole 65K or whatever. And it only showed the ones that I've got, things like that. But I just had the sense that there's a lot more about hacking than I know about, and that I should probably be more sophisticated about it, because I know I was hacked. I think a fellow RIT student got in and tried to destroy one of my school projects or something.
Oh, that's bad.
And I still see evidence of getting, you know, strange IP addresses from Europe that just look at me once a day, stuff like that.
Sure, they're scanning for you. What web server are you running?
2000 IIS5.
Okay, 2000...
Go to Microsoft's website and download all the thousands of patches.
There are thousands of patches up there. You need to download all of them. You need to check every day. As new exploits are discovered and are eventually patched, it often takes weeks, but they are eventually patched. You can get that. There's a wonderful book called Hacking Exposed. Get it.
What do you like about that book? What does it
It tells you what every exploit that they knew about when the book was written, what every one of those is, and how to protect against it.
Ah, okay.
Good luck, my friend.
Any website?
Start with the book. It gives you bunches.
Ah, okay. Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. I think we're going to try in about 60 seconds to answer a quick question from Debbie in Fairport.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Yes, I'm asking about updating a processor for a machine.
Mm-hmm.
I have a Windows or a Gateway 2000. It's a G6, and it has a 200 megahertz processor in it. And we just turned the machine over to the kids, and they're running games, and it wants MMX technology. Do I only need to update the processor or get a faster processor or one with MMX, or do I need to do the whole motherboard?
It depends on what motherboard you have and if it can be upgraded.
And then locating the chip for that.
Right.
And you'll need to talk to the folks at Gateway for that, I'm afraid, because they'll know. Get the model number off the back of the machine, and then they can tell
you. But those boards, quite often, if it's a full tower, quite often, even like our shop, we can slide another motherboard in there and a better processor.
As long as it's got a warranty, it's a less expensive and just as good or better alternative.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Debbie. Good luck. I must tell you, we had somebody join the web ring. It's Martin Toombs, who does a great column in his local paper on technology, so check that out.
Excellent, and thank you all for being with us. The votes keep rolling in. We have 67 votes in our poll this week. Very good for first day. We look forward to hearing your votes as well. And we want to say, in behalf of all my panelists, Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray,
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year!
Absolutely. Thank you all for making the year 2000 a great one for Sound Bites, and we'll look forward to serving you again
in the new millennium.
Year. Absolutely. Thanks for being with us. We'll see you in 7 on the next Sound Bites.
Program is provided in part by the Rochester Group, providing web-enabled decision support services to help you make smarter, faster business decisions. The Rochester Group invites you to join them in supporting WXXI. The Rochester Group, turning data into useful information. www.rochestergroup.com. And by Idea Integration, an e-business solutions provider integrating the internet into every aspect of your company's business. Idea Integration at www.idea.com. We'll be right back.